why a property manager is a good resource is because if you buy that property and then give it to them, they're going to have to rent it. You know, I think Matthew said on the podcast before, you date your real estate agent, but you marry your property manager. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Atlanta Real Estate Investor Podcast. I am your host, Spencer Sutton, and I'm glad to be here with you. So we've got big news. I've hinted at it before, but we have officially launched our new podcast called the Evernest Real Estate Investor Podcast. It's extremely original, right? So all jokes aside, we are excited about this because it is a unique podcast. So there's a few things that make this podcast unique and why I think you should listen to it. Number one is we've added a new host in on the mix. So we've got our colleague, I guess you would call him, Gray Hall, who is our director of brokerage services. So to date, this year, 2021, Gray has headed up our department, who's bought over 600 properties for investors in our markets. So we're adding his experience, his insights into the market. We think it's been very valuable. We've already recorded a lot of podcast episodes, and so I can just tell you it's been fantastic. So that's one thing. The next thing is we're going to do something different on this podcast. We are actually going to be buying deals and walking you through the numbers. We're going to be buying deals. We're going to be rehabbing these properties. So we'll talk to you. We'll lay out all of our expenses, how much everything costs that we had done. Then we're going to talk about underwriting, finding tenants, placing tenants, and we're going to talk about what our rents are. So you can, like, we will literally break down this entire process. So I'm excited about that. We're going to do that in all of our markets. So not only Atlanta, but also markets like Denver and Detroit, all the way to Columbus, Ohio, Jackson, Mississippi, Little Rock, Chattanooga, Nashville. I mean, we are going to be in all of our markets. And guess what? We're adding markets all of the time. So that's the second thing that makes us unique, this podcast unique. And then the third thing is really just our reach across the nation. We're able to, like, we have boots on the ground in all of these markets. We're going to be bringing these people to you. You're going to be hearing from them what is actually happening on the ground. And then on top of that, we're going to be finding the best of the best in these markets and interviewing them as well. So this is going to be fantastic. I'm excited. So what we're going to do today is I'm going to give you a sneak peek into that new podcast. What I'm going to do is I'm going to play one of our episodes that I recorded with Gray Hall not long ago. It won't be released for another probably month or two on our podcast, on our Evernest Real Estate Investor Podcast, but I'm going to give you a sneak peek. I'm going to release it to you today. And in this episode, we talk about how to make offers that get accepted, like the anatomy of great offers. And so I hope you enjoy it. You'll see this is going to be a fantastic podcast. So if you would, go ahead and find it on whatever platform you listen to your podcast on. Subscribe. We would love for you to leave us a review if you find any value whatsoever. It just takes, you know, a minute or two. Leave us a review. Can't wait to hear from you and give us some feedback. Listen, email us back at podcast@evernest.co. We would love to hear from you. podcast@evernest.co. You have any suggestions, you have questions, you have episodes that you want us to cover, we will absolutely do it. All right. Stay tuned because here comes a new and yet unreleased episode of the Evernest Real Estate Investor Podcast. And I'll be back next week with a new episode of the Atlanta Real Estate Investor Podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Evernest Real Estate Investor Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Spencer Sutton. Glad to be back here. And I have a co-host with me who's usually always with us, Gray Hall. Gray, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here. Matthew is out, so he's leaving us up to the experts to talk about making offers on properties.
You know, it's going to be good to actually get a word in when Matthew's here. He's talking over us. I'm kidding. Yeah, Matthew's out of the office, so it's the two of us. And so I thought this would be a great opportunity because you are the resident expert, our brokerage side of the business. So you are seeing these deals, you're seeing deals come across your desk, You're looking at offers. You're looking at properties. You're seeing how they're being underwritten. And I think this would be a great topic. Like, I want us to talk about what an investor needs to know as they prepare to make an offer. Like, what are the things they need to know? And I think obviously you're the person to talk about this.
Yeah, a lot of moving parts. We'll kind of go through, you know, a little bit of underwriting, you know, what's in an offer, how do you make your offer as strong as possible? I think this applies both in markets. You know, currently, it's a pretty competitive market. And some of these things might be kind of more tailored to that, but I think it applies kind of across the board, any different market. If you want to win deals, and if you want good deals, these are the things that you got to do to make that happen.
Yeah. I hear a lot of investors. As a matter of fact, I just got off the phone with one this afternoon. I was talking to a buddy of mine who's an investor. And I think the tendency is in a hot market is to think, well, there's just not a lot of deals out there. There's not a lot of deals out there. And that's just not the case. There are deals to be had. It's going to be competitive. But, you know, I think I've heard you say before, Gray, this is a numbers game. Like you just have to keep making offers that make sense.
Yeah. And I've heard a lot recently. I mean, the pushback to that is, one, do you know exactly what you're looking for? Mm-hmm. Do you know, we call it the buy box. We talk about it a lot, but it's super important. Do you know what a good deal looks like? And then two, how much time are you spending looking at deals? If you're not spending, and it doesn't have to be hours a day. I mean, it can be literally 20 minutes a day hopping on Zillow or connecting with your agent to, you know, get deals sent to you. Are you looking at them consistently? Because that one helps you get a, you know, understanding of the market. What is going on in the market? And then two, it just kind of like develops those skills to be able to test the ARV and test the rents and make different assumptions based on different houses. And you can also start seeing, and even if you're not ready to start making offers, one great thing to do is see what comes on the market. And then if you're in a market where Zillow will post the sales data, what did that property close at? I mean, you can learn a lot through there. I think that helps you structure your offers. I think that's why we've seen a ton of deals happen this year, because we know, you know, what they were listed at and what they ended up going to contract at. And so, yeah, you really got to put it in the work, but it can be 15 or 20 minutes a day and kind of using some of the structure that we have here.
Yeah. And everybody has 15 or 20 minutes a day. And we've already talked about this. So I think this is a good place to start off. We have already recorded, hopefully you've already listened to our episode about setting your investment goals. And with that, we're talking about creating your buy box. So I think this is, and you just mentioned that, Gray, I think this is where that starts. Like everything starts with creating your buy box, understanding what you're looking for and what you can pay for a property, and then sticking to it. So there's plenty of ways to find deals, and maybe we'll do an entire podcast on how to find properties. There's plenty of ways to find deals, but you know, a couple of that I'm thinking of that are pretty popular with, especially with out-of-state investors, are wholesalers, agents, and turnkey providers. So when you know your buy box, this is what I'm kind of getting back to my point of knowing your buy box. When you know your buy box, then wholesalers and turnkey providers are going to bring you properties that are more than likely maybe even outside of your buy box, right? They want to convince you, hey, this is a good deal. Stick to your buy box. Like, know what you need to do. Be disciplined. So I think that's the first step.
Yeah. And I think your buy box will evolve over time. And I think one thing newer investors struggle with is, well, it is a good return. Do I want a 6 cap? Do I want an 8 cap? Do I want a 9 cap? Do I want my cash on cash return to be 11% or 12%? Those are hard things to kind of know. But I think it comes from talking to people in the markets. Mm-hmm. If you got questions about markets and kind of what is normal for the market, reach out to us. Because I think adjusting your buy box for the current realities of the market is extremely important. Because back in 2010, 2013, you could find properties that were, you know, incredible returns, 20% plus cash on cash. And, you know, you could easily find a, 12 or 15% return. That's not the reality now. And so if you're looking for that, deals are not going to be there, but it's a numbers game, and it's about, you know, hitting singles when the market allows for that, and hitting singles and doubles and being very consistent about that. So yeah. Knowing the buy box and also kind of knowing the current market. And so those research things, like keeping a pulse on the markets that you're looking in and keeping a pulse on like specific neighborhoods. We hit on that one of these other podcasts. Like when you focus in on two or three neighborhoods and you start seeing the houses that come up, you start getting an idea of, you know, what should I be offering? And you continue to run rents on 3-2s in this one zip code. you're going to get pretty darn good at knowing whenever that deal comes across your desk from an agent or from a wholesaler, if it's worth your time to spend the 15 or 20 minutes analyzing.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. One, I think what you were saying earlier is old timers like me have a problem. We're stuck in the mid 2000s with what we want to pay for houses, but that's a great point. Like, know the market, understand the area that you're buying in, your buy box may need to change. You know, I think also as you pull up and look at what deals have gone for, something else you can do is you can call investors. You can find investors that are active in the market and talk to them about deals. You know, that's the great thing about the real estate community is people are open to share what they've done, deals they've done. I've interviewed a lot of investors over the past couple of years, talked to a lot of them on the phone, and people are pretty open. So you get a better idea about that market. So let's get into this, Gray. You know, I want to just, so you know your buy box, right?
Yep.
And so where do we go from here? If I've, you know, said, hey, Gray, I want you to find me some properties in one of our markets, and you bring back a property that is within my buy box, what's the next step for me?
So, yeah, I think one, if you're looking at a new market, having somebody to get you access to deals is very important. And so right. It's kind of tough to build a network. You know, we're trying to build out in these networks because we've got deals from our portfolio. We know wholesalers. So finding somebody who does deals in the market is the first place to go there. Now, once you kind of go through and you tell them your buy box, they might send you stuff that's right up your lane. They might send you just kind of whatever's on their desk, depending on
right.
how busy they are. Trust but verify. You know, as you build trust with agents or wholesalers or turnkey providers, you'll start to see, are their numbers inflated? Are their expenses too low? So always know how to do your due diligence, because I've seen mm-hmm. people get burned if they trust the numbers of somebody else and they didn't do their own research. And 2 years down the road, the expenses are double what they said, the returns are not there, the vacancy is higher, et cetera. So the first thing I would do is, you know, and you can build it on a simple spreadsheet to be able to input, you know, your purchase price and calculate all of your kind of hard cost, estimating the rehab, you know? So you've got to look at the rehab. If they're saying this is a $2,000 turn, and you can see from the pictures, there's, you know, there's missing shingles on the roof, those things do not match up. And so you've got to, you know, it takes time over time, and you can lean on other people, but trying to get that number as close as possible, even within a $5,000 to $10,000 ballpark, will put you in a good spot. And then, you know, does this fit your bed bath criteria? Does it fit your year built? So kind of running it through your filter. If there's any one big thing, if your buy box is 1970s and newer and it's a 1925 property, that is a disqualifier right there.
Yeah, go ahead, bail, throw it out. Bail on
it. Yeah, just don't spend the time. And it's not saying it's a bad house, but if that's not what you're doing, don't spend your time on it. So probably run into the kind of the main six things that you look at when you're looking at a property. Yeah, checking it off, year built, bed bath, area. And then if those look good, kind of move on. All right, let's look at the price. Where does this sit in relation to other properties? How much work is needed and what can I rent for? Those three numbers are really going to tell you everything you need to know.
So if I'm an investor from out of state and I'm looking at buying a property in Memphis or Jackson, Mississippi, and somebody brings this property to me, how can I tell, just, you know, maybe they're sharing something off MLS, how can I tell what the real rehab number is? You know,
it's tough because some properties have one photo up there and some have 30. And I've seen some recently that have 30 from 5 years ago. So really getting boots on the ground, getting somebody out there to lay eyes on the property. Now, it's tough in a competitive market because you can't get out to every property that you'd like to make an offer on. And so, you know, a lot of times if you're working with an agent, ask the agent if they've got updated photos. Majority of the time they do, and they might just not be on the MLS yet. So if you can stay on top of that, you know, getting photos from that and getting a realistic picture, and probably spending time paying a contractor to sit down with a couple, you know, a couple of properties or walking properties, even if it's in your neck of the woods that needs some work, with a contractor, pay them for their time and say, hey, what would you do to renovate this house to kind of this standard? You will learn so much kind of the more reps you get with this. And so your first one's really tough. And that's why you need people who, you know what they're doing. Reverse engineer. Anytime you get an estimate, go back and look at things, understand their pricing, understand why they're fixing the things. And so it's a tough number to get right. That's why you really need to lean on good people and lean on contractors in the market. But I think you can kind of start to know what paint costs, know what flooring costs, know what a typical bathroom upgrade costs, know what kitchen upgrades cost. And you can kind of piece together, you know, an initial ballpark estimate.
I think this is what apartment folks do really, really well, who are buying multi-units. I mean, they have this down to a science. They know exactly how much the kitchen's going to cost, the bedrooms, the carpet, all of that. With single family, you know, residential, you can get a better idea but you do have to, like you said, you do have to put your reps in to really understand it. And I mean, I'm just thinking about, you know, having boots on the ground. This is just speaks to the importance of having that team that you can trust and having somebody. I would imagine finding a contractor and paying them to go out to do an estimate, even in this competitive market, is still pretty difficult.
It really is tough to find contractors, especially out of mine. I mean, we have trouble, you know, finding contractors in the markets we're in. I mean, it's one of our biggest struggles is just finding the good contractors who give you decent pricing on there. And so, you know, in an ideal world, if market's slow, you might be able to get somebody out there before. But in this market right now, it's not possible to get your agent out there and a contractor, firm up your rehab numbers before you make an offer. So a lot of this is, you know, putting an offer. We'll talk about inspection periods. Know that you're going to most likely have an inspection period, but you want to get your numbers as close as possible. Because the last thing you want to do is, let's say it's listed at 100,000, you offer 100, and then you realize that it needs $50,000. Like, that's never going to work. So maybe coming in at 80 and they know it needs work, you've got a shot at least kind of, you know, seeing that deal through if you can get those numbers closer on the front end.
Yeah. And it's not like you want to tie it up under contract and then do all the work. You want to get, like you said, as close as possible.
It's a lot of work. You know, it's a lot of work for you, your agent, your contractor out there. And you don't want to, you know, waste people's time just making offers that really have kind of no business being made. And so, and you don't want to waste your time. I mean, time is extremely valuable. And so that's why this is the hardest one, because there's no kind of rental comps and ARV comps for the rehab. Because each single family is very different and there's unseen things like structural and plumbing and electrical that are tough to tell from photos. But there's a couple of good books out there on estimating rehab costs that you can at least get an idea of what that looks like.
Okay. So once you have the estimated rehab costs, you have that idea, then you really need to understand the ARV. Is that what you think would be next?
Yeah. No, it's a super important piece. And this really kind of plays into your buy box. Yeah, this is really a super important piece and it definitely plays in your buy box. I mean, if you're trying to burr the property and you're trying to pull out equity, the ARV is really important. If you're buying a turnkey property, it's kind of, you know, less important, but you still want to make sure, you know, you're paying fair market value. So it really kind of, if you're burring the property, you're not looking at necessarily what is this property worth, but you're looking at what can it be worth once we put money into it. So it's a different way to look at it than a turnkey property. You just want to make sure you're not paying 120 for something and the only other comps are 100. You just, one, it's not going to appraise. I mean, that's an issue you'll come up to if you're financing. But two, you just don't want to be underwater on a property where you bought it more than it's worth.
That's right. So you want to understand the ARV. You want to understand, hey, are you going to have equity in this property when you're done, especially if you're looking at the BRRRR method? Okay, so what's next?
And on that, I mean, look, reach out to your agent. I mean, they'll give you a list of comps. They've got the MLS in there. Wholesalers are not agents. And so, you know, they're going to put an ARV number on there and that's the trust but verify. And you'll learn that, you know, the more that you work with them, some are pretty spot on. I've worked with some and, you know, their numbers are spot on, but there's others and you got to understand people's motivations. I mean, their goal is to sell the property and
100%.
They want to show as high as ARV as possible. And so you just got to trust but verify. Zillow in markets that produce kind of that data where it's public record, like Texas and Mississippi, they're not always putting that on there. So you really need to probably lean on an agent in those markets. But other markets like Colorado and Tennessee and Alabama, you can go on Zillow and run a comp. And we can probably do some more in-depth videos. But really what you're looking for is as close as possible, recent sales within the last, you know, 6 to 12 months, and as similar a house as possible. So, you know, you don't want to comp a 1960s property off a 2014 build, because sometimes those new build neighborhoods are on the edge of an older neighborhood. It's not going to be a good comp, but kind of getting 3 or 4 similar properties that have sold give you, you know, you can kind of triangulate your data in there. So even if you're asking your agent to do the work, you know, learn to do that work yourself and kind of understand what they're doing to get to those numbers.
So let me ask you, is Zillow going to only pull the comps? Is it going to look at year built or is it really just going to pull the closest things?
You can filter.
Have to do the research.
Yeah, you can filter. Zillow's a good tool. Redfin's another one. So you can filter a certain area and then you can put a minimum year build, minimum bathrooms, bedrooms, et cetera. Now you can't obviously tell condition, but you can see what has sold in the last couple of months.
Yep. Okay. And so if you're going to buy this property, you want to rent it, it's going to be a property you're going to stick in your portfolio, maybe your first one, maybe your 10th one. You really obviously need to know the rental, like how much you're going to get for rent. That is
super important number, because you want these things to cash flow, because cash flow is what gets you through, you know, the bad times. If there's a market downturn or, you know, something happens where this kind of this paper money, this equity goes up and down, you got to make sure it cash flows and all according to your strategy. But yeah, so I mean, it's very similar to looking at, and like I tell people, this is like art and the science to getting rents. And you know, one, talk to people who do it in the market. If you're working with a property manager, yep, and you're going to give them the management, they're going to be happy to give you kind of their rental estimate. And you know, what we do is, one, we look at our own portfolio. You know, if we have, you know, 500-800 houses in the market, we've got a pretty good idea of what things are renting for. Zillow, you know, the information's on there as well. You know, they've got a rent estimator tool and you can see homes on the market and off. The thing with that is it doesn't tell you if somebody just pulled the house off the market and put it for sale or if it actually rented for those numbers.
Right.
And so there's kind of this art and the science, and there's Rentometer and there's a couple other programs out there. But your first few, I mean, even if you have to pay for a service, reaching out to other people, get as many, you know, insights as possible, because you're trying to triangulate what we rent for now. And then if I do certain renovations, what could it rent for, and kind of build out your cases there and be conservative. I mean, we see rents fluctuate like tons in the summer and in off seasons in certain markets. And so the last thing you want to do is buy this where it's really thin margins at a top of market rate.
Right.
And something
that's what I was about to say.
Yeah.
I was about to say, you want to be conservative. You want to be realistic, right? Don't get caught up in the hype. Even if it's something like, you cannot fall in love with a property. You just, you have to be very, very realistic. I know that we get calls like this all the time at Evernest. Like, we get calls from investors who are asking, hey, how much do you think this property will rent for? I'm thinking about this property. And our people are happy to do that. Any property manager in a market that is reliable will give you good information. And why a property manager is a good resource is because if you buy that property and then give it to them, they're going to have to rent it. You know, I think Matthew said on the podcast before, you date your real estate agent, but you marry your property manager. I mean, this is somebody you're going to have to live with. So they're going to give you a very realistic estimate of what they can get for rent. I know that we use something called Rent Range, which is kind of like Rentometer. It's a paid service. And even then, we'll send people reports. But what I tell them to do is take the comps that are listed there, go on Zillow, look them up, look all these comps up to make sure that they are truly comps. The last thing you want to do, just like Gray said, is, you know, your house is the 1960s and it's pulling a comp that's 2020 build. That's not going to work.
I have definitely seen that on there where you'll get townhouses. And so, and I think data will get there, but I think this also highlights like knowing what something's going to rent. Like in some of these markets, I know that a private pay tenant will rent a 3-2 for $795. And I know that a Section 8, you know, they'll allow up to a voucher for up to 950. So sometimes there's even that, or it might be on one street over and this one, you know, backs up to something you can't see. There's kind of three burn downs. So there's all these kind of other things that you can get from data. You can get close. So, and speaking about the offer, get it as close as possible. And then in your diligence period, you can get somebody out to the property to look at it, kind of really, really check in on those. But, you know, you want to kind of do a quick pass to get, you know, within 80%, 90% confidence rate of what that number is going to be.
So that you can make the offer, right?
So So and all of this needs to be, you know, you need to get this down to 15 minutes per property or less so that you can be able to run through. And then you can do, after your inspection period, do a lot more diligence. You know, you got a little more time, but speed is kind of the name of the game. When a property hits the market, go ahead and get that offer out.
Yes, that's correct. So let's go ahead and talk about, you've done your due diligence. You know what the ARV is. You know what the potential rehab is. You've gotten as close as you can. And you know the what the rent is more than likely going to be. Now it's time to make the offer. So let's talk about making offers in today's market. So you can do this research and get something quick, because I know that even if you're dealing with a wholesaler or you're dealing with somebody turnkey or an agent, they could be fielding multiple, like they're could be talking to multiple investors. So talk about how important it is, like you mentioned speed, but talk about what types of offers people are making nowadays. What's most attractive?
Yeah, there's basically working with an agent for properties on the market, and then there's off-market deals, and they flow really differently, but not completely differently, but there are some kind of nuances there. I mean, if you're working with properties that are on the market, typically you're going to be working with the buyer's agent and everything's going to be flowing through them. They're going to be preparing the documents, and you'll get in a good rhythm of somebody if they're making a lot of offers for you, where you can kind of, if you do your diligence, you can tell them, hey, offer price is this, earnest money is going to be this inspection period, and kind of these other special contingencies in there. Working with a wholesaler, if you're working with them direct, they're not an agent. They're basically a middleman between the seller of the property and you, and they're going to assign the contract to you. So that's going to be a lot shorter contracts. They're not using, the state specific contract. So it's a lot shorter. It's a lot faster. A lot of times wholesalers don't allow for an inspection period. So you're going to need
to inspect. That's what I was going to ask. Before. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that, but they will let you go and typically take a look at the property before.
Yeah. So that is one difference. You know, with wholesalers, they typically want to put it under no contingencies. Earnest money is hard if there is any earnest money, and you want to close in 10 to 14 days. Yeah. You'll have to it's harder to buy your first property from a wholesaler unless you've got really good boots on the ground. You can go out and do the inspection because you might have hard costs in there. And that's what I've seen is like, if you pay for a $250 inspection and you don't even have a shot, then it's just kind of money out the door. So you can work with some wholesalers. I mean, some will do inspection periods if you ask for it, depending on how hot the property is, depending on how big their buyer's list is. But yeah, that's probably getting a contractor and an inspector out there, either one of those, to inspect the property, and then you can kind of make your offer. I mean, a lot of times you can negotiate the price, and if they put it out at $80,000, you might say, hey, I could buy it at $75,000, and they say, hey, I can do that. Go inspect it. Get back to me in 24 hours. So kind of the clock is on to let them know. But with a property's
on them. But it's typically, let's just go back to wholesalers, it's typically a very short time frame, right? Because it is, if it's a good property and they've offered it at a decent price, they're going to have
a lot of competition.
That's right. You're going to have a lot of people that are interested. And I'll tell you, their best, a wholesaler's best customer is the investor who's done it multiple times before and they're ready to pull the trigger.
Yep.
And they'll say, hey, I'll take it $75,000. Don't even need to go see it. Done. And they're just going to go towards whatever's the most convenient. And somebody they have a relationship with who is actually closed. So if you're first time working with them, I would still say don't get so anxious that you like do something you shouldn't do. Still like stick to your guns, do the things that we're sitting here talking about, but just know that it's going to be very, very competitive.
Yeah, it's competitive and things move a lot quicker with those. I mean, you have to be paying cash. You cannot finance deals with wholesalers. And so kind of making the offer is a little bit different process than properties on the market. So you really got to know your numbers. You really got to trust your ability to kind of estimate. Because a lot of times the reason you wholesale a property is because it needs a lot of work or the seller's in distress. I mean, what we're seeing right now is less financial distress from sellers and it's more property distress and not wanting to do that. So those are typically the bigger renovations, the $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. It's easy to miss something on those. And yeah, and each wholesale, there's no kind of standard for wholesalers. So get them on the phone, ask how they work. Ask when you have to inspect by. If it's a vacant property, they'll give you a lot box code. You can go out there, check it out. But yeah, things move pretty quick with wholesale properties.
Okay. So what about on the market deals?
Yeah. So on the market, I mean, things still move fast. I mean, getting your offer in there, talking with your agent. I mean, offers that we're seeing right now, all cash is still king, and the fewer the contingencies as possible. And I understand that new buyers want to protect themselves from as much risk. And I think in different market environments, you can do different things. And when I say protect you from risk, if you want a 30-day inspection period and you want zero earnest money going out, and that's a really favorable contract for you, but it's not for the seller. And in a market where there's competitive offers, they're going to go with either, if they need to close fast, whatever close fastest or the most money as possible with the highest chance of closing. So think about it through those lens. I mean, their goal is to close the property and... So that's why cash is king. I mean,
you could tie that house up for 30 days and then bail on it. And then they're back to square one.
Yeah. And imagine if you tie it up on August 31st and you tie it up for 30 days and that's middle of October, you're approaching the holiday season. Like that's a big risk for them. And so I think communicating if you're going to do cash, it's just less risky to the buyer because there's not a financing contingency in there. Because you can make an offer with a pre-approval letter, something could still go wrong. I mean, crazy stories have happened, but in the middle of a contract, somebody goes out and finances a car and the whole deal's done. And so that's just an additional risk that you take if you're putting a finance offer. Now, obviously people listening to this are not going to do that, but the seller's perception is that it's riskier. And then contingencies, I mean, talk through if you're working with an agent or kind of understand your contingencies. We're still seeing offers get accepted with inspection contingencies.
How long are the typical inspection contingencies that you're seeing?
Yeah, the shorter the better. 3 to 10 days is kind of the max I'm seeing right now, 10 business days. Mm-hmm. And so that gives you ample time. But I have seen investors change it down to 3 days because that gives them a competitive edge. And if you can actually build a reputation for, we sold agents on this before, like, hey, we will get out there tomorrow and we will tell you by the end of the day tomorrow, even though we've got a 3-day inspection period, because that way they could put it back on the market 2 days
later. That's right. You know? They appreciate that. And they'll keep bringing you deals if they know you're serious.
Yeah, exactly. So you can still get inspection. And I would recommend definitely in your first couple deals. I mean, get an inspection done, understand, talk through with the inspector. If you're local, go out with the inspector, have them show you some stuff just for your kind of learning. And so then,
Well, I was going to ask you, with these inspections, how often are you seeing deals be adjusted? Purchase price, offers?
Probably 50% of the time.
Okay. So would that just kind of be, hey, this is just based on we were able to do a pretty decent job of estimating the repairs, and now that we're out here, we're seeing it's more, so we're going to have to adjust it down.
Yeah. And I think the common things, I mean, you obviously can't, if you wanted to change the countertops, you can't get a price reduction for that.
Right.
But if you get in the house and there's mold or the electrical needs updating, or there's a hole in there. I mean, those are all pretty common things that I've seen people get discounts for. Now, you don't want to go into an offer knowing you're going to do that every time. I mean, that would be my advice. You can do that, but you also get a reputation. I've seen some of these groups get reputations just talking to other agents where they know it's kind of their game. They offer high and then always kind of come in low.
Beat you down, right? You don't want to be
But don't be afraid to like go back. I think there's very reasonable things that you can't tell from photos, and that's why you get an inspection. Send them the inspection report and say, hey, the HVAC is 22 years old. It needs to be replaced. The roof has a hole in it or it's leaking. So yeah, use those as a tool, because any money you get off there can be put back into renovations into the property.
So, okay. So let's just say you've done this, you've gotten your offer, has been accepted. So what kind of things is the buyer, is your client going to need to be prepared to pay for at the closing table?
Yeah. So one other way to make your offer strong. And so when looking at offer, there's a couple levers. Obviously, you have the purchase price, and that's usually the biggest one.
Right.
You have the inspection contingency. The shorter you can do it, the better. And then there's a couple other, depending on the market, certain inspections. But things like home warranty, if you don't really care about it, don't ask the seller to pay for it. Or if there is, another one's closing costs. Like if you understand in your market how much closing costs are, sometimes sellers think it is more than it really is. I mean, it might only be $1,000 or $1,500.
Right.
But that's another lever that you can pull. Typically in most markets, the buyer and seller split kind of the settlement and closing costs.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen buyers change over and say, I will pay for everything on that. It's just more money back in their pocket. And so, yeah, I mean, those are kind of the typical fees. Like you kind of lump it all in at closing, but typically on a property, you're going to have inspection fee, which can range anywhere from $200 to $500. If you do an appraisal, if you're financing the property, that's going to be $400 to $600 for single family homes. Commercial, it's going to be higher. And then once you get your HUD, I mean, there's some prorated fees like the settlement costs that I told you about. And then taxes, title insurance, all those kind of smaller fees. Just because you see an $80,000 purchase price does not mean it will just be $80,000 out of your pocket. So very important to know.
Right.
You can talk to agents, and agents can give you an estimated cost at closing.
Can they give you a kind of like a pre-HUD or whatever?
Yeah. And typically on most deals, they'll prepare that for you. Some states require it. And so where it kind of lists out everything that you'd be expected to pay on there.
And that's good. And obviously, if you are paying cash, you're going to have a less closing cost. All right, Gray, what else? Is there anything else we need to talk about? I think this has been fantastic.
Yeah, I don't really think there is. I mean, there's levers and it's negotiations. And, I think the other thing to talk about is historically, investors have not wanted to pay the list price for the property and they wanted to get it below. Understand the market, because in some markets, if it's a little bit softer, less competition, you can do that. What I have been seeing is if there are multiple offers, there's not really a highest and best call, where people make their first round of offers and then they go back to everybody and say, hey, give us your highest and best offer the next 2 days.
Yeah.
People are kind of on hot properties, going highest and best out the gate, and then they just select a property. So, that's the other thing, kind of know positioning. I think, a couple of years ago, even you could come in under and then try to negotiate it. But if there's multiple offers, and a lot of times there is multiple offers on properties right now, you can't use that strategy and you're going to lose out if you try to go in at $5,000 below, but you really would be okay with the return higher. Not saying to just overbid on every property, but kind of talking with the agent, understanding the market, seeing if you can get a good deal, but also you don't want to lose, you know, any opportunity kind of getting in there.
Save that strategy for a very soft market.
Yes.
not necessarily a hot market. I was correct. Actually talking to one of our agents in Atlanta today, and she told me that they've made some offers on properties here recently, and there have been 40 and 50 offers on the property already.
Crazy. Still in Memphis. Yeah. It slowed down a hair, but you know, that was recently in Atlanta, but Memphis, you know, 37 offers, you know, and a lot of the crazies kind of calmed down Q1, Q2, really after kind of July, things have slowed down a little bit.
Right.
Still historically, they're pretty competitive, but it feels like so much opportunity is out there when you came from, you know, that kind of world and you go to, oh, there's only four offers. And so,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So seeing investors close more deals now because of that, just things have slowed down a little bit. Buyers pulling out of the market potentially, or inventory kind of rising.
Listen, everybody, this is a long-term game that you're playing if you're buying properties. Like, be patient. Take your time. The market's going to have cycles. And so this has been great, Gray. I appreciate you sharing this with us. What we're going to do is we're going to create a cheat sheet kind of based on this information. And we're going to have it on our website. So if you want to go to our website and download that cheat sheet, you can get that at evernest.co/offer-cheat-sheet. And it'll be in the show notes. So look out for that and you can download it. All right, great. We'll be back on another episode of the Evernest Real Estate Investor Podcast.